Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back. Today, Paul had a very special lunch date, and I wanted to honor that by talking about it a little bit. So you want to share who you bought lunch for today?
Yeah, I had a little champagne. I really shouldn't at lunch. Just a sip.
We can tell.
But congratulating Brett, my youngest son, who went to the Naval Academy and then 2 years of training, first starting fixed wing and then going to helicopters. He was a chopper pilot in the Persian Gulf and also the South China Sea. He served for 8 years, three different deployments. So all in 14 years. And I just am grateful to my son's service for his sacrifice. He basically put his life on hold for 14 years so that we can go full bore with our lives. And I want to thank all the parents of service members out there right now, relatives of service members. I, you know, got a front row seat what these men and women put up with, what they have to go through. And I'm just in awe of the people who serve this country. And freedom doesn't come cheap, but I'm proud of Brett. We had a nice lunch, had a chance to toast him and thank him. And his brother was there. And it was just really nice, Jor. Thank you for asking.
Well, and I think people sometimes don't remember the parents and the family of the service person who is serving and what they go through. I know there were many nights when Brett was in the South China Sea where you and Lori would be watching the news, would be worried, would be, you know, concerned over anything that aggravated that situation. And really, I know he served 14 years of his life, and I am grateful for him and for all of the service people. But also, we should honor the families of service people because they give up a lot, too. You suffer in many ways, along with your son, daughter, loved one, husband, wife, whoever is serving. And we are grateful for that sacrifice as well. So you, the families of service people should be honored as well. So I hope there was a toast to you at the lunch today as well.
No toast to me, thank you, Jura. That's a nice thought. But he's a civilian now, moving on, getting his MBA.
Yeah.
Proving that he is the smartest of the bunch. So very happy
for him.
Don't
let Walter say that.
Well, no, they're both smart.
So yep. What is he going to do? What is his service prepared him for? And what does he want to do now, obviously, after the MBA?
He's interested in cybersecurity. Mm. He loves computers. He's built his own computers. And I don't really know, but I think he wants to be able to work here in the Twin Cities for anybody and not have to physically move somewhere else. And it's interesting how that has changed. The pandemic has changed expectations, especially for tech workers. It's like, if you want to rent my brain, let me work where I want to work. Here are my terms. If I get stuff done, don't tell me I've got to schlep into the office 3, 4, 5 days a week. If I can be productive. So I think that's what he wants. I'm not sure he knows exactly what he wants, but he wants a foundation just in case he wants to start his own company. I think he's got a business in him or two. We'll see.
I wonder where he gets that.
His mother.
Well, I'm excited for him, for this next chapter, for his wife, for you guys. Hopefully after school, he'll come back and live in the Twin Cities, like you said, and you can have more grandbabies running around.
I hope so.
If that's what you choose, if that's what he chooses and his wife chooses, and because I know that would make you and Lori happy.
It sure would. Thanks, George.
Good. Let's take a quick break. There was an op-ed with Stephen Belton. Stephen is a frequent guest on the show. He comes on every Tuesday. He's the president and CEO of the Urban League Twin Cities. He wrote a fascinating op-ed about the MPD report on civil rights last week, and we have much to discuss with him. Stephen Belton, up next. Found the Minneapolis Police Department engaged in a pattern of practice of racial discrimination against Black people and organizations over a 10-year period. It found they created fake social media accounts to follow people and organizations like the Urban League Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. The president of the Urban League Twin Cities joins us. We don't have him yet. He joins us every Tuesday, Stephen Belton, because we want to talk about this. He wrote a fabulous op-ed piece in the Star Tribune today. You can find it on the last page of the front section, where the title is Culture of Racism is No Surprise. And I get that, Paul. You know, I think that while the report, as shocking and appalling as it is, it certainly wasn't a surprise to people of color and minorities, because they have been experiencing, they have been living with this. They know that driving while black will get you pulled over. They know that, you know, spitting on the sidewalk will get you pulled over or will get you questioned by the police, even if that doesn't happen to white people who do the same offense. So that they have been living that reality. Mm-hmm. So while the rest of us, it might have been shocking to read in print, they know that is the truth. Stephen Belton, he is the president and CEO of the Urban League Twin Cities, joins us on the John Schuster Hotline now. Welcome once again, Stephen, to the show.
Hey, Stephen.
Thanks, Greta. Hey, how are you?
Yeah, we read your piece. We read your piece. And again, not surprised. We covered this heavily last week. But apparently, Urban League Twin Cities was one of the organizations that was followed by, I guess, fake social media accounts of the MPD. Were you personally followed?
Don't know, Jordana. There's no, we haven't been able to unpack so far what exactly happened. What we know is what was in the report, which is that the Minnesota Department of Human Rights found evidence that Minneapolis Police Department officials, we don't know if they were officers or patrol people, were creating fake social media accounts. And apparently they attempted to influence or to contact or to, manipulate the Urban League as well as the NAACP in the course of doing that. And so we don't know. They also mentioned the State Department of Human Rights that after they had done their investigation, that the social media accounts were erased or eliminated or, deleted. And so we're not able to, to find specific evidence, but we are reaching out to the department to find out what, if anything, what more they might be able to tell us and share, and whether they were specific individuals targeted or whether they were just going after the organization in general.
Well, Stephen, you wrote a powerful op-ed, and I just want to read something you said. This institutional pattern and practice of MPD can only be described as an unchecked culture of racism enabled by department and elected leaders who've been unwilling or unable to control or hold them accountable. You go on later in the op-ed to say courts can't change culture, justice can't be negotiated. As Minneapolis continues to talk about what to do with the police department, how do we change the culture? How do we reform? At the same time, we're trying to add more cops to the beat and attract, a new department head. Where does your brain go in terms of what comes next based on what we've learned from MDHR, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights? How does that flavor the next step?
Well, I think the other point that I try to make in the commentary of Paul and Jordana is that this isn't we can no longer say this is an instance of a rogue cop or two, that, Derek Chauvin was, just an outlier, and that these kind of incidents are exceptions to the rule. This is a culture of racist policing. Now, I need to add that not everybody who's on the Minneapolis Police Department, not everybody who is a cop or who wears the blue is a racist. That is not what I'm saying, and that's not what this report indicates. But it does clearly indicate that we have a culture of racism and racist practices that are not only implemented or carried out, but are tolerated or looked the other way by supervisors and by the political leadership. They have known about this stuff for a long time. So it begins, you ask Paul, what do we do next? It begins with acknowledging that this is a cultural practice, that it is a pattern in practice, that it is institutional wide, and that our leaders have known about it for years. Second, it we need to hold people accountable for doing it. We need to hold our elected officials accountable, but also need to hold accountable the police leadership. They have the capacity. They have the tools already. I will be the first to say that we could certainly strengthen the laws and the regulations, but they have the capacity now to address these incidents of racist policing when they happen. And they need to be held accountable for doing that. We need a dashboard so that we can know what exactly they are doing and who they are holding accountable and how they're doing it. But we don't have that information now. And third, we need the community to weigh in on this, to say, look, to the extent that the police department believes that these racist practices that they're doing, which include name calling for crying out loud, you know, calling, you know, using the N-word and calling even other police officers using these racist name calling there. It includes such horrendous acts as that, Paul and Jordana. We need to say that's not acceptable. We need to say as a community, remember that we expect of our leaders, you need to change this culture of practice, pattern and practice right now. No waiting. You need to do it now.
So, Stephen, are you saying that former Chief Madari Arredondo, former Chief Janae Harto, Betsy Hodges, Mayor Fry, are you saying they were all aware of these practices and they allowed it?
I'm not saying it. Minnesota Department of Human Rights is saying it. They're saying it. So this report, to be clear, captured a 10-year period of time from 2010 to 2020. There were three mayors during that time. They were R.T. Ryback, Betsy Hodges, and Jacob Fry. And then we also had three police chiefs. And that report doesn't name those individuals, but it's clear that they were covering data and doing and interviewing people about that specific 10-year period of time. And the report says that they knew about it, that they were aware of it, and they did nothing about it, or at least whatever they did about it was ineffective. There was an article in the Star Tribune this past Sunday where the reporters tried to contact the three political leaders, meaning the three mayors, and the police chiefs during that period of time. And for the most part, they all declined to be interviewed. The one who did interview, you know, provided comments was R.T. Ryback, who had this sort of meaningless comment that, oh, gee, you know, my hands were tied and we've got to roll up our sleeves and move forward now. And that is the same sort of attitude of, you know, laissez-faire, whatever happens, that got us here in the first place. To be clear, Paula Jordana, this is a 10-year period that they're talking about, but this goes back decades. Black people in the state of Minnesota have been complaining about this really since the inception of the state itself. The Urban League Twin Cities was created, formed in 1925, specifically to address these kinds of concerns.
So, Stephen, you end your piece by saying demand, they reform, rehabilitate, and retrofit policing. Now our lives depend on it. What advice would you have for listeners, irregardless of skin color, in terms of getting results and moving the needle?
Great question. I say that you know somebody who is either an elected official on your city council, who's a cop, you know, who's a member of the, you know, the police federation, you know, a legislator, you know somebody, and if you don't, shame on you, but you don't have to be ashamed for long. You can find that out. It's easily accessible information. Call those folks up and tell them that you demand that they get about the business of reforming our police department now. Make it their number one priority. And make it clear to them so that the police are clear that when they are behaving like that, they're not only acting with impunity, they're going to be held accountable, but that the community doesn't support that, that these racist practices do not reflect the values of the community. Because I really believe that these police officers who are committing and who are contributing to this culture of racism are doing so because they believe that they're reflecting the values of the broader community. And it takes the broader community, and specifically the white community, to reject that and to say that is not okay. And so call your congressman, call your state legislator, call your city council member or mayor, and just light up their phones and let them know we want to see reform of racist policing now.
Okay.
Stephen Belton, President and CEO of the Urban League Twin Cities. It is a powerful piece today in the Star Tribune. Thank you for writing it. Thank you for always coming on and talking to us about these hard issues. I'm I feel embarrassed that once again, you know, Minneapolis is in the spotlight, and I feel embarrassed that this went on under our noses. But now that the public knows, hopefully there can be real change.
Thanks,
Stephen.
Appreciate the time to be with you. Yep. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Oh, God. It's embarrassing that this was going on, and everybody knew about it, and everybody should take accountability for it. I don't know what kind of repercussions there could be for past leaders or even current leaders, but, you know, I mean, if civil rights were violated, there could be legalities there, and it was covered up, that could be a crime. I don't know that it is, but I'm sure there's an investigation underway right now.
When we come back, a deep cleansing breath will lighten things up. Tim Lammers, what to stream, and I think there will be some mention of Ozark when we come back on CCO.
The Coke Father is bringing us too many problems.
You want me to take care of it?
Gangster movies are dead.
This is not just some gangster film.
We need someone who understands Italians.
Our instance Ford Coppola. He's got a great vision.
We have to put this in the picture.
A scene about gangsters arguing over sauce?
No. A scene about family arguing over sauce.
Oh, boy. That sounds interesting. On Paramount Plus, The Offer, a remake of the Godfather series. What's going on? Hey, Tim Lammers.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Jordana. And, The Offer is about the making of The Godfather. It is a narrative series, though. This isn't a documentary, although I would probably be just as fascinated with the documentary about this. But no, basically, this is a recreation of all the events, all the turmoil, all the fights with the studio.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All the fights between the creatives in making this classic film, and I don't say these words lightly, probably because I'm a Godfather fanboy, one of the best series I've ever seen.
Wow.
Really?
Okay.
Because it sounds like, they made a movie about making a movie. But
and it's a series, though. I mean, it's a 10-episode series, and it really just, it goes into all these interesting backstories, you know, it's the story from the point of view of Albert S. Ruddy, played by Miles Teller, who is this producer, young producer, you know, he starts with Paramount, Robert Evans, a legendary producer played by Matthew Good. The guy's a clone of the real Robert Evans, who passed away a few years ago. You know, big studio boss in the 1970s, you know, trying to get this novel made, not only facing these critics who said, well, mob movies don't sell, but actually dealing with the mob themselves, mob members in New York that are none too happy about this story of theirs coming out. So you have that sort of external pressure as well. I love seeing people played. Dan Folger, who is in Fantastic Beasts, he's Jacob in that one. He plays Francis Ford Coppola. He looks like a Francis Ford Coppola clone. You got people like playing Al Pacino and Marlon Brando. That's coming up, not in the first three episodes, but that's coming up. So it's like history, it's like watching history unfold. It's like watching history in the making, except for instead of seeing the Godfather movie, you're seeing every creative aspect that went into it, and it is incredibly fascinating.
Wow, that's awesome. That's on Paramount Plus, and it's available now?
And There was no trouble getting it made because The Godfather is a Paramount picture. So full cooperation there. It's so fascinating. And again, I would imagine a lot of that has to do with being a fan of The Godfather or not. But yeah, Mario Puzo, too. I mean, he's the guy that wrote the novel. You know, you look at his backstory, et cetera, et cetera. A struggling author who had the book optioned and Paramount sat on it for a year until Warner Brothers showed interest, until that told Paramount, you know, we're on to something here. And, you know, arguably is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on a little bit. I read recently, and my kids are huge fans of Andrew Garfield. I read recently that he is taking a break from movie making, but I guess he made this one, Under the Banner of Heaven.
From the first moment anyone set eyes on her, they were hooked.
An evil presence is in his family.
What if this case isn't just a husband who turned against his wife? What if tonight is just the first edge of a bone? Finally working its way out of our own desert's floor.
Heads up right now!
This goes beyond just a murder.
Beyond everything I believe.
Okay, so not for Jordana.
Well, you know, it's a murder mystery and a true life situation here. This happened in 1984. A young mother and her infant daughter were brutally murdered in Utah in the Mormon community. Andrew Garfield plays Jeb Pyrie, who is a Salt Lake City or Salt Lake Valley detective, and he and Gil Birmingham, who is his partner, investigate this murder, and it may or may not be tied to Mormon fundamentalism. So, look, I have not seen the Book of Mormon. I have not studied the Mormon faith. I have to tell you, it's really learning more about the religion, the LDS, the Church of Latter-day Saints, was a real eye-opener for me. So in addition to, you know, learning about other people's faith, I mean, you have this riveting story where you think you know where it's going, but right now it really is a labyrinth, and it just really grips you and keeps you watching. It's a 7-episode series that's on Hulu.
And Tim, you did an interview with Andrew Garfield and Gil Birmingham, right?
Yeah, I love, well, first of all, you know, Andrew Garfield, obviously, in Spider-Man No Way Home. So we did talk a little bit. You can't talk with Andrew Garfield without mentioning Spider-Man. So, you know, I have that. It's on my website, directconversations.com. It's a link to Looper, who published the interview. But Gil Birmingham is also a terrific actor. You've seen him in Hell or High Water and Yellowstone.
Right.
Just a great actor. It's a great, you know, on-screen chemistry between these two guys playing detectives. And they had a lot of fun, you know, doing the interview together, too.
Very cool. Hey, Tim, we're out of time. I just want to mention and thank you for your review of Ozark. I don't want to give away any spoilers for listeners who have not binged through those last few episodes. All I will say is this. I found it unsatisfying, the ending, and I also think that maybe the showrunners left the door open for another season, if you know what I mean.
I totally agree with you, and I am deeply disappointed with the ending. In fact, I'm going to go so far as to say it was a terrible ending.
Oh. Yeah.
Just not really what I expected, nor I think should have happened. Read into that what you will. I think you and I, Paul, have always been on the same page about this series, so you probably know. We'll probably have to exchange emails or something to talk about this further, because, again, you don't want to spoil it, but... It just didn't end the way that I thought it was going to.
Yeah, I thought of you. I agree, but it's still worth watching. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, no question. I just think they botched the ending. I really do. And that happens a lot of times with the finales of big series. It's very, very rare that somebody nails it. I think one of the very few for me was Afterlife with Ricky Gervais, three seasons of that, the very last episode. One of the best I've ever seen finales. But a lot of times, look at Friends and look at... Seinfeld, what a disaster that was. You know, so those finales don't always work the way we want them to.
Tim Lammers.
Thanks so much, Tim Lammers. We appreciate your time.
Catch you on Friday.
You can always find him on social media at timlammers.com and on Facebook and on Twitter. When we get back, Mike Max is going to be joining us. I believe he filled in this morning. Good news about the twins yesterday. Hear more with Maxie next. You should talk about this.
I'm not sure this is one of those better days. No, it was rhetorical. I was actually...
It's beautiful.
Never mind. It doesn't matter.
Where she pee?
None of it matters. None of it matters. Maxie Sports brought to you by the John Schuster Group at Coldwell Banker Real Estate. And Maxie, what is the deal? It's a little like the Twins and the Yankees. What is the the problem with the Wild and the Blues. They lost all three regular season matchups against St. Louis. And last night it got awfully quiet over at XL Energy. What's going on?
Well, where's JP?
JP?
Yeah.
You want to do the traffic, buddy?
Do you want to do traffic?
Yeah, traffic wasn't bad. Yeah. Came in. I was in the northern suburbs today after an assignment and came in. It wasn't. Now that I think about it, in fairness to the people that I've complained, it flowed well today.
Okay. It was okay.
Yep,
it's because the construction hasn't begun yet.
No. Yeah. Once you get to downtown, all bets are off. But that's another story.
Right.
The Blues are really good. I mean, I really when I watched them last night, it was like, wow. I mean, I know they're good, but I didn't know they were this good. And because the Wild came back on them, they're down 4-1 and scored three goals in the third period in St. Louis a couple weeks ago. The Blues coach is, 12-0-2 against the Wild, something like that?
Oof.
Since he took over. So they just, I mean, it's hard to explain, but I think everybody that was there thought the same thing. They said, you know, after they scored their first goal, you go, well, Wild better get one quick. When they got their second goal, the general feeling was the Blues are in complete control. You try to say when it's a 2-0 game, you keep saying, boy, the next goal is a big one. If the Wild can get that one, then we got a new game. But you just never felt like there's just this presence and this confidence in the way that they play. You felt like they owned the night, you know, and you're going, it shouldn't be like this. But you felt like the Wild were working their butts off to get opportunities and whatnot and getting nothing. And then Jared Spurgeon, with uncharacteristic, he's about as calm and nice a guy as you're going to meet, but he slashed, you know, he got fined today $5,000 for a slashing at the end of the game. Fortunately for the Wild, I guess, he was not suspended for the next game because it's an egregious offense and they can do that. And that probably speaks to where this team was at last night. He's the captain. He's quiet. He's not a guy you would expect to do that. And that tells me that the Blues really got the Wild reeling and thinking and wondering if they can compete.
Well, we all lose it sometimes, so
yeah.
I'm glad he didn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I know you worked this morning. You filled in.
Yeah.
You were doing the morning here on
CCO. What
was
your favorite part?
You had some interesting callers. You had some interesting calls there, Mikey.
There's on the show Frasier, there's obviously he plays the part of a radio talk show host, he's at home one day and he says, "What was your favorite part of my show?" And Daphne, the lady that lives, says, "It was that call from Tacoma." And then later she says, "I always assume there's at least one call from Tacoma." So.
No, I was listening.
I feel that way about my show a lot, you know.
No, we have some interesting.
What was your favorite part of that deal where you were kind of talking about sports? That was good.
Yeah. what else? You said you came in from the western suburbs. Was that because you did the show from home, or what else?
I did that show from home. Then I was out the Vikings. Harrison Phillips is a new guy, and he was out at Crescent Cove. Children's hospice facility in Minnesota that is unique to Minnesota. And he was visiting with the kids out there, and it was he just signed with the Vikings from the Buffalo Bills. But he got here and he said, I need to do something with kids. And in visiting with him, I hadn't met him until today. I mean, he seemed like the real deal. He was talking about the stuff he did in Buffalo and the way he engaged with the kids. And sometimes those can be awkward conversations because they're 10 years old, they're 15 years old. In this case, they've got some real medical needs. And he really did a nice job, as I watched him, flowing a conversation and making them feel special. So that kind of made my day going out there. I did it for an assignment, but, I mean, that was my observation.
That's so sweet.
Very cool. Hey, Maxie, the Twins are playing the Orioles again this evening. Nice victory last night. They've won 10 of the last 11.
10 of 11, Paul.
They are hot, and the Orioles, not so much.
Not so much, nope. The Orioles have been one of those stops where you go, let's get healthy, because that's the kind of team that they've had of late. But the Twins were pretty clean last night, 2-1, but tonight Joe Ryan pitches, and that's always kind of fun to watch right now. That piques my interest because you know he's going to give you a little something. He's got good stuff, and he will give them a good chance to win the night again. Two runs might not get it done. It did last night, but... He's got something going. And they lost Sano, you know, and Garlic are both on the IL, and two starting pitchers as well. So they're surviving a few things too, and that's a good sign. Buxton's missed games. You know, this is we're just into May. We're not even a month into this season because they started on the 7th a little bit late, and they've again had ample injuries, but you don't notice it as much when they're winning.
Yeah,
you see Alex Kirilloff playing the night over in St. Paul. He's going to bat third again for them, left fielder that they would like to get back. Larnach's given him some good at-bats, but obviously he's not that far away from rejoining them. He's been out as well.
Mikey, we'll be watching on TV. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's a long day, but we always appreciate you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
When we get back, we will get back into the big story of the day today. Of course, the leak to Politico of a draft ruling in a Mississippi case that could overturn Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. You know, this is tough subject matter. It really is. But we're taking it on today. We were taking your calls or your top or your texts at 651-461-9226. And joining us is going to be Rachel Palos. She is a professor and a former U.S. attorney from now at St. Thomas University, constitutional expert. She talks with us a lot about these stories. And she wrote that she was appalled by the procedural breach here. So we want to hear more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's coming up. And also a chance to win some Twins tickets. In fact, should I wait, DJ? Wait till after the hour, or can I ask now?
No, you got to wait. You got to wait because you got to play the Twins win song. You got to listen for Win Twins.
All right.
And we'll give tickets away then.
Yeah, Twins versus Houston game on Tuesday. Stick around. That's coming up very quickly, but only if you're listening on CCO. We'll be right back.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.